Good morning, this is Paul Ingram of PainScience.com. It is Wednesday, May 25th. Today's post is called Placebo Paradoxes Pacified, and this is your one-take reading of that. I'm sticking to the one-take thing. I've been enjoying it. I find I get into a good groove where I'm a little chattier and just focused on delivering interesting ideas and less focused on worrying about producing perfect audio. So it's working out for me. I hope you like it as much as I do. I may not be the best judge of how well it's working, so please send me feedback as always. And this post is going to make you want to deliver feedback, I bet, because it's a tricky and controversial topic. I look forward to your comments. So the word paradox gets applied to placebo a lot. Does the profusion of perceived paradoxes perpetuate placebo's plentiful popularity? Perhaps. For the same reason, people like Escher's illusions, we do seem to enjoy being baffled and bemused by placebo's many apparent internal contradictions. But the emphasis here is on apparent. For instance, if a placebo is inert by definition, then how can it also have an effect? If it has an effect, then it's doing something and it's not inert. Head exploding emoji. But this isn't as profound as it seems. It's like hot sauce, all heat and no fire. I have been fighting placebo hype for many years, basically for as long as I have been writing about the topic. My focus has been on fighting the hype. I have a featured article on this topic, which you can get to at painscience.com/placebo. That'll get you there. But tackling the paradoxes has been on my to-do list for at least several years. It's missing from the article, and it will remain missing for a little longer. I've written this. In this post, I'll finally get around to pacifying the paradox beast, mostly by revealing that it's about as fierce as a baby panda. And this is just going to be for members, along with the audio, so I'm only talking to members right now. But in a little while, I will put this into the main placebo article. I don't like holding back content that I think is, you know, practical and useful and important to people. I don't like to put that behind a paywall, but this is pure dorky stuff, and I don't think I'll be doing non-members too much harm by withholding it from them for a while, but I'll put it in the main article later, sometime down the road, once the dust is settled, and I'll probably make corrections and changes to this after getting all the feedbacks. So on with the post. We got three paradoxes that we're going to deal with in the roughly in ascending order of difficulty. The first one is potent or powerless. We can't have it both ways. The most basic placebo paradox is that there seem to be so many reasons to think that placebos are powerful. The legend of placebo's power began when Dr. Henry K. Beecher said it was powerful in his 1955 paper, The Powerful Placebo. We've been buying into that idea and elaborating on it ever since. For decades, there weren't even any real challenges to it. So the idea that placebos are powerful is really quite entrenched. But that conclusion was always untenable because it's so clear that placebo does not actually resolve anything for most sick or injured people. In other words, if placebo were medically impressive, then purveyors of obvious snake oil like homeopathy would have extraordinary success rates, the real thing easily measured in a controlled test. So the solution to the first paradox: the effect of placebo isn't actually powerful in the first place. It may be something, it may be interesting, it's not nothing, but it's not medically amazing. There is even an ongoing debate about whether it exists in any meaningful sense at all, more on that below, but it's definitely not powerful. So there's no conflict. Potent or powerless? Yeah, it's much closer to powerless than potent. Paradox number two, is it unethical to prescribe a placebo or unethical to withhold it? How can it be both? Since placebo is defined and widely understood as something that's biologically inert, it is generally thought to be unethical to prescribe them. But it is also unethical, quote, not to use something that heals. And that's a quote from a 2004 book, or no, 2008, by Newman. So this does seem like a paradox on the face of it. Cue the robot with the smoking circuitry pitifully crying, does not compute. Like most ethical collisions and paradoxes, this arises more from imprecision in language. The solution: dispose of the delusion that withholding placebo's modest powers is a serious ethical breach. The effect we call placebo can be something that heals in some limited sense. Making people feel better is part of healing, after all. And yet, it can still fail to meaningfully change the course of disease or recovery from trauma. So the stakes are just low here. It doesn't matter much. But more importantly, the effect also doesn't have to come from a prescribed thing. The ethical conundrum is based on prescribing a bogus medicine, a physical and deceptive placebo object that is not what it appears to be, a pill that just has sugar in it instead of medicine, and a syringe that has saline in it instead of medicine. We know today that the object is not only the most obvious way to trigger what we call a placebo effect. Oh, that sentence is just broken. Okay, well, rewind and let me improvise it. We know today that the object is just the most obvious way to trigger what we call a placebo. There are also many contextual effects in every therapeutic interaction that can change a patient's experience through a variety of psychobiological mechanisms. This makes the ethical problem mostly obsolete, as well as less important. You don't have to prescribe a bogus medicine to get the modest benefits of contextual effects. Indeed, good luck even trying to stop them. You can't stop contextual effects. A bunch of them are going to happen regardless of whether or not there's a placebo object involved. Contextual effects are just something that emerge naturally from the therapeutic interaction to varying degrees. So I think that that's, you know, pretty well and truly dealt with, and I'm going to finish by decorating the ethical section with this quote from Game of Thrones. This is one of my favorite quotes from the whole saga. This is Jaime Lannister talking to Catelyn Stark when she's got him imprisoned, and she's given him a rough time about breaking his vows, and he replies, "So many vows. They make you swear and swear. Defend the king. Obey the king. Obey your father. Protect the innocent. Defend the weak. But what if your father despises the king? What if the king massacres the innocent? It's too much. No matter what you do, you're forsaking one vow or another." I love that quote. I love that scene, and I love the way he delivered those lines, and I tried my very best to imitate the way he did it. Not a very good imitation of Jaime Lannister, but I tried and I had fun trying. All right, so we're on to the third one, and this is the real granddaddy, the mother of all placebo paradoxes. How can something inert have an effect? This paradox is baked right into the term placebo effect. How can a placebo be both biologically inert, which is the generally accepted definition, and also have an effect? If it's inert, then it can't have effects. If it has effects, it cannot be inert. Self-destruct. This one has been tying people up in knots for decades, and you can read some seriously dense scientific literature about it. And I'm going to read some of that to you for fun, because it's kind of crazy. So this is from the conclusion of an article in the journal Theory and Psychology. This one paragraph, and I'll read it pretty quickly, because the whole point here is not going to make any sense. This is dense academic language. But here's the kind of thing that has been written about this paradox. We have also seen the need to go beyond attitudinal accounts and overcome the instinct-cognitive dichotomy. We now acknowledge that between instinctive physiological responses to causal stimuli on the one hand and attitudinal responses on the other, there is a mode of responsiveness to loci of significance in the life world that is not stimulus response because it's intentional, meaningful, and indexical, yet nor is it attitudinal and representational. While existential phenomenology and ecological psychology propose formal analytic accounts of this mode of responsiveness, I recommend that here too we might instead pursue the policies proposed by ethnomethodology and undertake ethnomethodologically informed sensory ethnographies so that we might recover the ways in which members make available to observation and acknowledgement to lay and professional analysts their non-attitudinal responsiveness to meaningful loci of significance in the life world. Wow. That's quite something. I read that paper. I actually read that paper. It's not all as bad as that, and I got some things out of it, and I even dare to dream that I kind of sort of understood some of it. And one of the things it did for me in writing this this debunking of the paradoxes was I wanted to find a way to express the fact that I think the paradoxes are overstated without invalidating expertise like that. There are very serious people thinking and working in this field and talking about these things, and it's not all for nothing. So what? How do I do this? How do I get out of this trap? How do I, as a non-expert, write about why the placebo paradoxes are overblown, but still let that guy have his view? It was a real challenge in doing this. Let's see how I do. Going back to where we were before I read that bizarre example. So I dare to propose that this is not as profound as it looks. I think this paradox is actually about as serious as a finger trap, which you can get out of in the same way. Stop pulling in the direction that doesn't work. Once again, it's mostly just about the messiness of language. So the solution here, the easy way out of this one, is just to argue that placebo does not, in fact, have any impressive effects to begin with, maybe none at all, and that is a hotly debated but defensible position. But we don't have to defend it. It's not even necessary to make the claim that placebo doesn't have effects or impressive effects, because the idea that it's a paradox is based on unnecessary absolutism. If you insist on placebo being perfectly inert and somehow also having powerful effects, then that is going to make your head hurt. And it might sound ridiculous to say that someone would insist on placebo being perfectly inert, but I read a whole paper about that. I read a whole paper that was just a doctor tying herself in knots, trying to make the point that absolutely anything you put in the body is going to have some kind of biological effect. And that is technically true. But of course, in most cases, the very, what effects it would have would be very minor and have nothing to do with the illness being treated. There is definitely some absolutism in the thinking about this. Just relax the terms a little. Placebo can be mostly physiological mostly physiologically inert for most purposes most of the time. And yet then, in addition to that, it can still have modest subjective effects driven by psychology. Just stop being absolutist and poof, the paradox pain goes away, without taking anything away from the experts trying to understand how a placebo object might inspire the effects that it does. I got one more solution, though. I got three solutions to this one paradox, and I think they get better as we go here. In fact, in retrospect, the cat-cucumber analogy was probably the only thing I needed to debunk this paradox. Allow me to explain. So the placebo effect is not one thing that is somehow bafflingly both inert and effectual. It's two things, one of which is inert, the other of which is effectual. So there's no paradox, there's no conflict. First, there's the placebo object, which is in fact inert, though not perfectly. Second, there is our psychological reaction to it, which is absolutely real, but not necessarily powerful. Psychological reactions to objects do not change the properties of the objects. And here is my absurd example. Cats are freaked out by cucumbers. Seriously. And in the post, I link to videos about this. If you haven't seen this, it's hilarious. It's just, the internet is full of videos of cats going absolutely berserk when they discover that there's a cucumber beside them. They're eating innocently at their food dish, and they turn and realize that there's a cucumber there, and they just freak out. So yeah, weird. But no one thinks that cucumbers are powerful, which is the point here. No one is wringing their hands wondering how inert cucumbers can possibly have an effect on cats while maintaining their inert credentials. There is no cucumber-cat paradox. If the cucumber is inert, how can it have an effect on the cat? If it has an effect on the cat, how can the cucumber be inert? Well, because cucumbers apparently have some freaky meaning to cats. The point here is that the effect belongs to the cat, not the cucumber, just as the placebo effect belongs to the affected, not to the placebo. So, mission accomplished, I think. Paradoxes debunked. I have a sneaking suspicion that the alleged paradoxes of placebo are really just a way to exaggerate its mystique, to sustain and amplify the legend of placebo, to sustain the legend of the powerful placebo as originally conceived of by Beecher. Paradoxes are cool, and placebo is cooler because it has paradoxes. But the coolest of the paradoxes, the inert versus effect paradox, is ultimately it's just an obvious deepity. And that's a real word, although not a word that is widely known. It was coined by philosopher Daniel Dennett, I believe, or if I remember my dorky reading correctly, it was actually his teenage daughter and he ran with it, something like that. Anyway, the basic meaning of a deepity is something that seems more profound than it is, and more specifically, on the one hand, the trivial interpretation of the paradox is correct, but not very interesting, just semantics. On the other hand, the most profound interpretation is just misleading hyperbole. That's a deepity. Placebo is not a glitch in the matrix or a rip in the space-time continuum. It's just that humans are complex and messy, and our emotions and perceptions can be influenced by things that are medically impotent. Duh.